keep in mind, these companies are not trading based on their earnings. These are call options based on the silver ounces they have in the ground. So you're not going to buy. And in fact, if those issuers were to dip on it on poor earnings, the quarterly announcement, that would be a buying opportunity because the sellers are buying those shares for the wrong reason. The shares are very, very attractively valued priced right now. And that is based on, like I said, that the shares divide the share of, or you can pick SAU or LHEI divided by the price of silver. And it's a better buy for silver issuers now because silver has broken out at $30 level. So from both fundamentally and also both from technically speaking, there is quite a lot of room to run out for silver miners.
John Lee, how you doing?
Fine. How are you, Andy?
I'm doing well. So we've had quite the breakout since we've last talked. And I was joking off camera that you were 45 days too early, but you had a great call. We talked in March and you said that silver is about to run really, really fast. And boy, has it. I haven't seen it. I've been doing this, I don't know, maybe 30 years, meaning I've been paying attention to the metals markets and commodities markets, and I've never seen silver run really this fast. So I want your thoughts on that, what's going on, what's driving that, and this breakout.
Well, not only silver is doing well, gold has also made my target. Recall that when I was on your show in March, when gold was just tad under 2,100, and I said,
we did. You did. Well done. Well done.
24, and it could up to 28, depending on you can measure the cupping handle on a linear scale or on a log scale. Answering your question, this silver run up is tame. I was 45 days late, and you to follow all the previous silver run ups, the pace and the ferocity of the run up is. This is not atypical. The 2020 run-up went from 14 to 30, 28 and a half in 2 weeks. In 2011, with the Eric Sprott sort of led Asian physical corner, and it was, again, from the low 20s to 50 in less than 2 months. Same with the Hunt Brothers in 1980. And part of the reason is it is a very small market, mostly driven... majority of the time driven by industrial demand, which constitutes 70% of the physical usage of silver. And the problem is when the investment demand kicks in, because this market is so small, as we talked last time, it's 300 million ounces. It's $10 billion, a drop in the bucket, especially today's flushing liquidity. That just a little bit of new money that comes with the market going into the physical, not just the paper trading on the COMEX, that would just have a very significant ripple effect. And what happens then is, and the industrial demand buyers came from being a resistant, reluctant buyer waiting for a higher price. All of a sudden, they have to chase the market because these are mission critical applications, to secure their allocations, not to disrupt their manufacturing process. And that's why I see this big, big run-up. And then once that buying exhaust, right, like the party's climax is reached, then you got this inevitable crash. And then you get another 5 to 7 years of doldrum. And much like I talked about in last show and many other shows, that you cannot fall asleep in this run-up to usually last no more than 6 weeks. If you miss it, you got to wait for another decade to catch it back home. And that's where we're at right now.
Yeah. So let's talk about that, where we're at right now. We had this run-up here. Where do we see we going? Are we going to have a pullback, or is it missed? Is it over now? Or is this different now in the sense that there's a lot of relative strength? Comment about that.
Yeah. I have to confess, you hit me yesterday and I was traveling. I got a food bug for the last 4 years. I only had one meal in the last 3 days of liquid. So my faculties are not, I'm not 100%.
Yeah.
The silver run-up is going to go higher, almost definitively. The reason is, and part of it held up, like when gold went out 2000, I talked about the laggard in silver, which should have caught up already. At a 70-1 gold to silver ratio, at a $2,000 gold when gold broke out, silver should have been, 4 months ago, silver should have been where we are today. So right. But it's not. Wait for a bit. Part of the reasons I mentioned is because the industrial demand was putting a damper on the price. And that could be traced back to the complete collapse of the Chinese real estate market and Chinese economy as a whole. Some of it's well documented. I haven't been to China in the last 6 months, so I'm not going to say I know exactly what's going on there, but it seems pretty doom and gloom over there with the top real estate developers blowing up with commercial papers in the hundreds of billions of dollars range going belly up. So you have basically an apocalypse in Asia where people were, you know, going hungry and getting their homes for cows. The last thing they have in mind is you know, going out there and speculating on the Shanghai Futures Exchange on silver. So,
right.
It's very clear that the Chinese equity market had gone through a reversal. So what China is today is literally like what the NASDAQ was 3 years ago, just coming out of the pandemic. So the equity market in Asia had, China had gone up and a little Hong Kong about 10-15% just in the last 2 and 3 months. And now you're seeing that reflation of base metals. Part of that is in anticipation of China's reflationary policy in deploying capital in infrastructure development. Part of that is, I think it's more to do, in fact, with the speculative investors coming in anticipation of that potential sort of physical stimulus that's to come. And when I say it's coming higher, it's first of all, you have the Chinese equity market that's established a very strong bottom, definitive bottom, along with Hong Kong. Secondly, you have copper that is broken out emphatically to all-time high. And yep. I don't think it's coming back. You have also together with platinum that's also breaking out, and some of the lackluster-based metals like zinc and also has staged a very strong rally. So it just seemed to be very broad. It's this very broad market, not some particular silver specific event that's driving so in a way you're almost like a surfer. You're like, you don't want to be the odd one out just paddling right. when everything is sort of, you know, waiting ashore or the pedestrian, like you're just sticking your neck out in front of a traffic light and looking for like to turn green. So I feel strongly about it. And then also, if you look at the equity market, despite all the bad news in the market, like the Apples and a lot of the companies that missed their earnings, the Starbucks, and yet you're looking at equity markets that's NASDAQ is breaking out to all-time high. We can talk about that. I think there's other things in play, not so much fundamental driven. But all these confluence of factors are pointing to higher silver price. And you're also looking at the breakdown of the gold to silver ratio. It was trading at a very tight range, a channel between say, 90 to 80, and now it's broken down in that 10-year trend that was a falling wedge, and now it's trading at 75. Now, historically, when you go below, you know, once you go below 70 to 70, and that ratio can go up to sort of 50 and still can go as low as 30. At this point, it's very, and if you look at technically speaking, silver's only got up past 30 one, two, or three times. And every time it's done so, it's gone to 50, like the two times, 1980 and 2011. So I don't see this trend any different, especially given the purchasing power of the dollar is being eroded by another 50% from 2011, which means even just nominally speaking, silver should be at $30, used to be at 20, which means that if the silver managed to peak at 2011-50, this time can go to 80. Nobody knows. In terms of resistance level, talking technically speaking, $32 is a very, very brief break. It shot up a couple of times from 27 to 32 without any hesitation. So it's pandering around this $32 level, refused to buckle down below 31.5. So I would not be surprised at all and go on record to state, God, we're gonna see 35, but like in by early June. And after that, we don't know what's gonna happen. Another thing is the market is still anticipating potential rate cuts. I think that's completely yield founded. And we should talk about the inverted yield curve. I think that's a very fascinating subject. So that just shows that the market is still behind in recognizing what is to come. So there's no fear factor yet in the market, and which means that there's further room to go for the equity market. There's further room to speculate in the base metals market. And the silver is going to outperform over gold. And we'll be seeing 35. And after that, we could easily go 50.
Let's talk about the inverted yield curve, because I think there's a reflation game that's coming on. I think that's part of it. And I want to get your thoughts on all of that. And I think that's what the yield curve is signaling.
Well, if you pull up a long-term chart since 1980, interest 10-year rate has gone from the peak of 15%, over 15% in 1980 to where we are today up to 2011. It went down as low as 1.5%. That's the 10-year. We are looking at a generational breakout in interest rates. In 2011, when I was having my birthday, I remember I came on the show, a different show. I said interest rates bottom is going to go a lot higher to 3%. And it went to almost 4.5%, 5%. The 10-year sitting at 4.5%. It's going to go a lot higher. I would not be surprised at all that in the 10-year is going to be at around 7.5% in the next 18 months. And then the Fed funds rate or the 2-year yield is going to be at easily breaking out of 5 towards 6 to 7% range. What I'm referring to. And let me just talk. And the reason for the breakout of the yields are not to do with inflation. Let's be clear on that. The last time oil trading at $70, $80, where we are today, the average oil price throughout the 2010 to 2020 was $80. Okay. And the average interest rates from 2010 to 2020 was 2%, 3%. And where we are at $80, $80 oil, and yet we are at yield of, Fed funds rate of 5%. It's not to do with inflation. It's not to do with commodity prices. It's not to do with geopolitics. It's strictly to do with the 2030 WEF agenda of having the ordinary peasants of all nothing and be happy. And that really was it boils down to from my, I'm a CFA, I'm an analyst. I came from a dot-com industry. I'm not, my father's not a gold bug. I'm not a gold bug. And it's just, I'm seeing and calling it like it is. And the low interest rate era was by design to get as many people hook onto the debts as possible. I mean, Andy, if you look at only 4 or 5 years ago, people were paying negative yield. Negative interest rates, like people are buying bonds at 20% premium, which means that by the time the bond matures, you lose 20%, 20 cents on your dollar. That was unfathomable. But in any case, that just shows you that is the top of the market, which means that the top of the treasury market, which means that when the trend goes reverse, the pendulum gets swung extreme to the other side. So I would see easily. I don't see the Fed cutting interest rates at all. Like, it's funny that five months ago, your market participants were expecting up to 3 rate cuts. I would chuckle, right? It was a little comical. And now the script has changed to, the market's already relieved that the Fed is not contemplating rate hikes, right? So, and they're just testing the market. And now I could easily see a hike before the end of the year, right after the election. And up to 3 rate hikes in 2025, maybe even more, to bring the Fed funds rate close to 6 to 7% range. And what you'll see is the 10-year, the yield curve, the inversion is going to disappear, and the 10-year is going to be trading at 2 to 3% premium at the end of this run. to the 2-year or to the Fed funds rate. So you'd be, I think, you know, by this time next year, by the end of next year, you'd be looking at 6 to 7% Fed funds rate, and you're looking at close to 10% 10-year and 30-year mortgage. And okay, so let me address this one, the inverted yield curve. The curve has only been inverted 3 times since 1980, since I was born. And the definition of inverted yield curve is the short T-bills interest is higher than the long term, which doesn't make sense, because if you want to give somebody lock up your money for 10 years, you would reasonably expect a higher interest rates and versus say you're parking your money short term. And the reason and people are speculating that people say, oh, the inverted yield curve because the Fed is tightened too much and they're expecting the Fed to start easing interest rates. And this is based on the false premise in a falling interest rate era in the last 20 years. So every time when there's inverted yield curve that was happening since year 2020, it's because the market was overheating. The Fed was jacking up interest rate very quickly, like in 2005, in year 2000, the dot-com, and also in the 2021 after the financial crisis. So the Fed dropped interest rate to near zero, and then market heated up. Oh, it went to 150, equity breaking out. So the guys said, okay, I need to jack up interest rates, right? So they went on a very high trajectory while the 10-year was falling. And that's why you got this inverted yield curve of higher Fed rates than the 10-year. However, I think, like I said, the script is the story, the narrative is gone, it's changed. So what you'll see is continued higher and higher Fed yield in 2 years. And then all of a sudden, I think the inflection point is going to come. The market participants realize, right? The Fed funds rate is not going to be cut. And then all of a sudden, they're sitting on this paper and they're like, why would I be holding a 4% when the Fed is 6? And you're going to see just a massive rush of treasury holders, wholesale dumping the 10-year. And then you're going to see eventually in the next 2 to 3 years, the yield curve will definitively bring back to positive, the yield curve. And this is one of my highest confidence trades, I would say, for the next couple of years. Even if, you know, like obviously the upside for treasury is not as attractive as say silver, which I'm low, I'm sure treasury. But it's in terms of risk and reward, I just cannot see a better trade. And so that's a bit of a plug. And this is how I see it. And we're in for a very interesting ride, Andy.
Yeah, well, that would be highly deflationary and really bad for equities, right, then, with higher interest rates?
In a traditional market, yes. However, we're not in a normal world setting right now. You have wars going on, you have non-compassmentous heads of states that are governing the world. And so we're not in a normal era. You're absolutely right. In a high interest rate environment, if the risk-free rate doubled from 2% to 5%, like we are right now, and if the companies fail to double their dividends, then their share price needs to be halved because the risk-free is double, right? So for me to receive 2% dividend instead of 4% risk-free, I'm not gonna pay $100 for a share that paid 2% dividend when I can pay $100 and get $4 from the bank, which means that I should be pricing my stock at $50 instead of $100 if the dividend is $2. It's a very simple mathematics. So we shorted the equity and we lost money. Every time we short, we lost money. You know, the likes of James Channels, you know, their short runs went from $8 billion just closed door, right? So I think a lot of guys, doom and doomers, kept doing these fancy charts and say, you know, the equities can crash tomorrow and just never do. And the reason is this. Those are the only one reason for this, for the NASDAQ to be breaking out all-time high. And is that you have the people that control the printing machine. They're printing. They don't, the set of rules are only followed. The rules are made to be broken. So So on one hand, you have the guys that want to apply for mortgage or corporate world, that need to finance their commercial papers. They have to pay for 5% interest rates, and they have to have better, harsher qualification standards. But the guys actually control the printing press. Their wealth is not measured in dollars. The dollar is a voucher system for the peasants. They literally will go to the Fed and do a general ledger and just buy the market and through BlackRock, State Street, and Vanguard, which collectively own about 70% of the S&P 500 already. And the reason they do that is not profit signal driven. It's to continue their agenda, because they have to be able to funnel and fund and control, and calling the Jeff Bezos, and calling the Tim Cooks, and calling the Googles, and they have to be able to calling the Disneys. They have to have these towers of you know, they need to continue the agenda. Then that's why you're seeing this divergence of hiding high yields, but yet equities are refusing to buckle. And these trends are not reversing anytime soon, but they could. So I would say 80% of the liquidity and volume trading in the market, every single market, is all algo, and 20% are actually, like, another example, you know, we're doing hiring people all the time, from the Gen Zs, millennials, to the my era, right? I'm 50, to the baby boomers. Like, I don't know anybody who's owning S&P 500. All they talk about is crypto. So if nobody's owning S&P 500, who is buying the NASDAQ to all-time high? You got to think about that for a minute. And as I said, those are the invisible hands that are just accumulating from the disguise of the ETFs, and also from the disguise of punch protection team. And they're buying wholesale in the range of tens of hundreds of billion dollars on a daily basis. Nobody has that sort of capacity to absorb that sort of liquidity, stepping on all the critical support levels, and then magically reverse these trend lines. I mean, this is not child's play. You know, these are $100 billion plus in purchasing power.
Yeah, got it. So talk about all that, and how does that relate to precious metals equities here? Are you still seeing deep value, or if this is such an algorithm market-driven market, a liquidity market, are those going to still be left behind? Or yeah, talk about that.
Unfortunately, not only the silver and gold prices are managed, but the mining shares are managed as well. You're seeing a number, and they're becoming very blatant. There are a number of days, you know, the representatives, so the bellwethers of the mining, the Newmonts and the First Majestic is an absolute classic example. In days, you will see Silver Majestic exhibiting weakness. The day on the up silver day, and then it will have a very weak close. And the next day, you know, silver got waxed, right? It's almost if somebody has some sort of telltale sign or has some sort of oracle sphere that can rub and get some, like, you know, like this dicey roller, right? Like, it's going to go up or go down tomorrow. It's the mining shares, in my view, I know for sure, because Silver Elephant, I think, is part of that group, even though we're a very low market cap. That they are all algo. A lot of the volume is algo generated, and I would actually go and say that the issuers like First Majestic, for example, and their fees are run up a little higher already, but still are good value. In terms of the mining shares divided by, if you look at it, just like, I think that the mining shares actually better buy today than they were 2 or 3 months ago at the same price level, or even by slightly higher price level. So I'd rather buy First Majestic at $7 today than $5 before silver went to 30. And if you look at the silver, if you look at the First Majestic divided by the silver ratio, it has broken out, but it's now going back to a very strong support level. And it's very, very low level from 25-year inception of, say, First Majestic. If you even take Quarter Lane or Heckler, which is lesser speculative issuers, also quality stocks and with good liquidity, there are a fraction and there are four more sales. Keep in mind, these companies are not trading based on their earnings. These are call options based on the silver ounces they have in the ground. So you're not going to buy. And in fact, if those issuers were to dip on it on poor earnings, a quarterly announcement, that would be a buying opportunity because the sellers are buying those shares for the wrong reason. the shares are a very, very attractively valued priced right now. And that is based on, like I said, that the shares divide the share of, or you can pick SAU or LHEI divided by the price of silver. And it's a better buy for silver issuers now because silver has broken out at $30 level. So from both fundamentally and also both from technically speaking, there is quite a lot of room to run out for silver miners.
Got it. Okay. So what should an individual investor do? Should they be trading this market or, that is the $1 million question, if you would.
I am a CFA and the standard answer will be, it depends on your time horizon and depending on your risk tolerance. I would just say Rodman is a stock operator. One of my favorite quote is if you expect money from the market, then you're kind of doomed, right? Because you have the psychology. So you're not giving what the market gives you, but rather you're imposing your will on the market. And that will get you blindsided. So I would say if you want to speculate on the silver market, you don't want to take your daughter's September enrollment or your wife's stipend, your alimony payments, to come in market and buy today and hoping you double tomorrow. I think if you want to buy silver shares and silver stocks or silver bullion or silver futures, for example, you got to have at least 6 months to a year a horizon and also be able to withstand, like if you lose money, right? 6 months from now, so that money, you got to have a longer than 12 month horizon, really. And then you got to have the risk tolerance that you can stomach that volatility. I'm not a huge fan of buying silver on breakouts other than a very technical long-term breakouts, like the $30. But if you're trading like this sort of on a day-to-day, week-to-week, or like 32 to 35, and you're trading 10-day moving average, putting a very tight stop, you're doomed because the algos, right? It's going to rinse you out. So you got to be able to stop. You got to be able to stop at day-to-day volatilities and have the conviction to buy on the dips and then. So I would say right now, you just want to buy some quality issuers. You want to buy silver. If you want to speculate on silver futures or silver ETF, buy them with modest leverage or no leverage at all. And then closely watching how the market reacts to the Fed's interest rate hikes and how the equity market behaves. And there's one more thing I want to share. You know, last show we talked about some of the indicators are signs that silver may be toppy. Silver is momentum trade, as I mentioned, right? You got to have all the players coming in, industrial, the retail, and the speculative, and the physical guys all at the same time to fill up that bonfire. And the momentum has to carry through because the very moment that momentum exhausts, the cartel is going to come back and pick away the market. And sometimes the cartel will even step in, which I'm a firm believer that first was just a run-up 2 months ago. The cartels came in and cooked it up to 10, 11 US dollars and then to try to create that top, right? So now they're challenging the top again. So the cartel will help build the bonfire before they pour the ice on it. So the key I'm telling you here is this. You want to watch this closely for an intermediate-term trader. Is you want to watch the correlation in how silver behaves to a rising dollar. Because what you're seeing right now is, like, for example, last Friday, it was a concerted attack by the silver bulls. It was a very typical Friday, not much going on. A Monday was a Canadian holiday. So usually would have been a perfect setting for a cartel to attack the market. But instead, the bulls grabbed by the horn and took silver up 6-7% from 29 to $32 just last week. That is in a rising dollar. The dollar index the dollar was steady. So that just tells you that these people are not the ordinary flavor. They're ready to make a statement. They're ready they're putting up their shield, like they're ready to go head on. This is clash of the titans, like I said. So the signs you're gonna watch out for are the days where silver and gold exhibit prolonged continued weakness on the rising dollar, okay, and they're establishing higher, lower highs, and mining shares are showing fatigue. So that is a sign that's telling you, and on the declining volume. So these are the signs that are telling you, hey, like, you know, the bullets are shot, right? Like you're like the guys that need to reload, you know, like that the movie, The Days of No Tomorrow, like reload, right? But there's no, like, you know, you're running out of ammunition. And that would be a precarious scenario. But right now, it's very clear to me that they're ready. They're gearing up for another massive attack because they're saying that it's a Friday. I am showing those are my work hands. I'm showing my cards. I'm all loading up. I'm ready to go. And if you were to smash me, I have a next round ammunition. I'm ready to go. And you're not seeing silver going back to below 30, you know, below 31. And right now it's hovering 32. Like I said, if my call is correct, it's a medium to high confidence call. You're going to see the 35 in the next couple of weeks. And then from there, which it's going to close by the day. Why caveat? I know I'm talking a lot. And I always do when I talk about silver and the markets is the caveat you're going to watch out for is the dollar is trading at, is resting on a very strong 200-day support at 104. The invisible hands are determined to take it back to a previous high of 108 to 110. So the 105, 106 level is a very heavy resistance. And that resistance is going to be tested first time, didn't break out last Christmas. But that level is going to be tried out again. And coupled with rising interest rates, it's going to maybe provide enough fuel to break out of that 106, 107 dollar index on patch you to 108 to 110, maybe even higher. And you have the guys that are the Japanese yen, right? And the euro just ready to say, jump how low you want me to jump. They're ready to go. So it's easily fathomable, feasible to take the dollar a lot higher than we are today. The question then becomes, and I'm sure you know the question already is, how is silver and gold going to behave in that rising dollar environment? Are the players ready? Because you're the other side of the aisle are declaring, like, you know, you can see, right? Their AKs, their 47s, their artilleries aren't getting loaded up, right? Like, you see they're coming, right? Now the question is, I don't know the answer. You don't know the answer is, on the bull side of the silver guys, are you willing to step up? Are you going to be man enough to step up, right? And then they're going to throw all sorts of things, and they're going to increase the margin requirement. They're going to impose additional penalties and deterrence on people that want to own equity physicals in the IRS and pension funds. They're going to nibble away from the ETFs and their votes and then at middle of the night and who knows, right? So they're going to try all sorts of tricks. However, is your money before the total adoption of digital currency, of which then you will not be able to buy gold and silver from Kitco, for example, they're going to throttle your purchase easily. So before that come on, they cannot really stop you from going to your store and buy physicals. They cannot. So the upper hands is always resting on the right side, right? So it just, we just kind of wait. So the end result is inevitable. It's just whether it's imminent. And we don't know the answer. And we'll find out very soon. You're going to see 35 with ease. And I would say by September, it's not unreasonable to see that $50 being challenged. I guess the caveat is a rising dollar. And the other thing is seasonality. Seasonality is playing against us. That's why you see the laggers of the mining shares, because they've been at this adage already of selling in, walk away. And so they're cashing out, it's had good gains. And now, so like I said, people are loading up right now. Just like, I don't give an F about seasonality, technical trends, rising interest rate, rising dollar. I don't give an F about it. I'm ready to go. Let's just see if these guys have enough conviction and enough resolve to go at it. And I think they do.
Excellent. Okay, John, I think we're going to end on that. Like last time, that was very provocative. I've had a lot of things to think about. If people want to reach out to you, do business with you, or follow you, how do they do that?
Yeah, check us out at silverelephant.com. It's silverelephant.com. The stock has doubled since we talked.
Double since we last talked. Yep.
Yeah. And with very good volume, we traded the highest volume in the last 3 years, just last week. I think last Friday, actually. And we got a lot of new shareholders. It's still extremely undervalued, 25 million market cap with 100 million ounces in the ground in revenue producing. Let's give a minute. The reason we're so undervalued, not because there's something wrong with the company, it's because we're generating cash flow and we haven't diluted. We've only done one financing, diluted 3% of our company shares. All of our peers has gone financing, throwing papers left and right. So they're increasing, they're tripling of the market cap from us. It's not a function of their share performance. It's not because of their, what they've done, but because it's just a lot more shares outstanding. But if you look at the share performance, I don't think we're not leading the pack, but we're not trailing, behind in the share performance from the bottom of the market. So what that means is that we have more upside just from a fundamental perspective, even though all the charts is quite a little stretched. But our market cap still trailing by our peers by a long shot. So there's still a lot of upsides. We have good momentum. Then there, we just put in some drill assays, and they're very good. We discovered some gallium and indium, which is our strategic metals for the 5G's and electronics. So check us out, silveralloc.com, and or follow me on Twitter. I talked about the interest rates. I'm going to write a piece about the inverse yield curve. And I say if there's one trade I recommend, a bit of a longer term trade, kind of like, stash it away, and you're not lose 10% a day or down or up, but buy some short treasury, the ETFs. Or If you have T-bill, like if your long-term bonds, get out, get out and sell them. The interest rates, I'm pretty sure it's one of the very thing called that I have a strong conviction I have in terms of the direction of the timing is that the yield is going to go a lot higher. The treasury is going to go a lot lower.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much, John. Again, quite the talk. I'll put all of this in the show notes. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you, Andy.